We map where we've been by the scars on our skin. We can only sing the songs we've been taught to. Rachel always recommended messing with the settings. She said it's better than settling for whatever they give you.
Sundown, it feels like I'm riding a train I'm not on. Sundown, it feels like I'm riding a train I'm not on.
Rachel was practical.
This is the Hood Rat Recap. We're your most steady source of the Hold Steady news from the unified scene. I'm Mike from St. Paul. St. Paul must be the unluckiest saint of them all. And I'm joined by the unifying scene's very own King of Queens, Gasper. How's it going today, Gasper?
How's it going, Mike?
We just heard a brand new song at the beginning there, Gasper. What do you know about that?
Yeah, man. Messing with the settings. That was pretty incredible.
Pretty incredible, yeah. It just broke Friday. We're recording this on the weekend here. And, yeah, it looks like we got a new album coming out in May, I think it said.
It's like May 17th or May 20th, something like that.
Yes, and I'm hoping that we'll also... I mean, we heard that the Hold Steady was coming out with a new album. And if this is like when Open Door Policy came out, All These Perfect Crosses, which was, I guess, not a new album for Craig. It was a compilation in 2021. But they came out about a week apart. So I'm kind of hoping that'll happen again. Maybe we'll get a Hold Steady album.
I got you. You're thinking a new Hold Steady record. Interesting.
Yes.
And they did allude to that at... which show was it? Wasn't Brooklyn Bowl. It was the Weekenders. They kind of alluded that there was new stuff coming.
I think.
Yeah, they did allude that there's something on the way. Interesting. So I hadn't even thought of that.
So what do we think of this new song, Messing with the Settings?
I'm loving it, man. I saw a lot of reaction online was they were getting God Is in Chicago vibes from the song. I mean, it's not a slow song like that by any stretch, but I could definitely see the feel. I loved it. You hit that ending and it gives you goosebumps, man. Like it's.
Yeah. I thought I got the God in Chicago vibes. Cause he kind of does his Leonard Cohen, sing talking
mm-hmm.
on some of it. But I thought this had really big production. I don't know. I thought this had the most production of any of his songs I've heard so far. I could be wrong. What do you think?
I could definitely see that. There's definitely, I mean, just the promo stuff around it, you could see there's a different effort on this record. He had that like almost weird art project film thing that he was promoting the record with, which is kind of cool because it hyped it and you're like, what's going to happen? And like, we all knew it was going to happen. He's going to release a song and then he's going to release a record. Like that's what the news is going to be, but the effect was still there. Created some mystery around it for sure. So he's definitely got some, you know, a different take, but like it's definitely a greater effort to promote the record. And I think you're right about the production as well. It's this one looks like it's going to be kind of special.
Yeah. And it look, you know, he calls the last three albums he released a trilogy. So I was wondering, well, like, is this one going to sound completely different? And I think it's just some familiar and some different, you know, what we've heard out of the first song so far.
Mm-hmm.
Little different production. I was looking at some of the, so the album's called The Legacy of Rentals. I'm looking at some of the titles here. He's got the Armorillo Kid, Birthdays, Curtis and Shepherd, which kind of reminds me when he puts those two names in. He's got Benny, you know, from the old albums, he's got Benny and June, and he likes to use two people's names quite a bit and stuff. Doesn't have a girl's name here like he usually I guess he does have Jessamine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yep. So, yeah, so this is the first time we've had breaking news on this podcast.
Yeah. Hopefully the next time will be that he's going to do a solo tour. I'd love to catch him live again.
That would be awesome. So on today's show, it's really exciting. We got we speak to Fiona all the way from the UK. So we kind of have like a round table discussion with her at the pub. We'll say the bar, but we'll say the pub today since we're going to the UK. And Fiona is our very first ever female voice here on the Hood Rat Recap, something we've been trying to achieve for a long time now. And what a great way to start. She's a real fire plug of a personality. So let's get to it right now and talk to her love of the Hold Steady.
This was a Marvel movie. I'd say, what's your origin story? Like, how did the Hold Steady reach out to you? And where are you, in North London or North England?
No, North England. I'm in between Liverpool and Manchester.
Okay, so how did you find the Hold Steady there?
To be honest, and this is probably the most boring origin story you can have, but I read the Pitchfork review of Separation Sunday, and it sounded like it was something for me. Wow. And it was pretty much instant from there.
Excellent.
Just from hearing the album, and then they were just instantly my favorite band, and they have been ever since.
Awesome. So you've been following them since just about the beginning, because that's the second record, right? So it's
2005-ish, I think. So they've kind of been with me, because I would have been, let me work this out really quickly. Yeah, I would have been 20. So they've kind of followed me throughout my entire adult life. They're sort of a constant.
Yeah.
In that sense. So, yeah, I think I've lost count, but I was trying to work it out. I think these two nights were gig number 17 and 18 for me.
Wow.
I think.
Cool.
That's impressive.
And when they would come to Manchester kind of twice a year. So it was,
right.
It was quite easy to wrap the numbers up.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. They talk about people who are like, they follow them and all that. And Craig brings us up on stage sometimes that there's a guy who's seen over 100 shows.
Wow.
That's a lot of shows.
that's us. But then the commitment of the people who come to the Weekenders from America is just unbelievable. I mean, this weekend we spoke to people from Israel, people from Denmark. Like, it's only a couple of hours away for me, but it's a hell of a commitment for.
Yeah, it's. I go to Brooklyn Bowl every year, and it's the same thing. We have a friend who I believe is from Wales, and it's like,
right.
We met her at that show, and we only ever see her once a year at that show.
Wow.
Yeah. I want to go to the Weekenders next year so badly.
I wholeheartedly recommend it.
I'm going to start saving now myself. Hopefully I can make it.
I'll buy you a beer.
Oh, that would be great.
I expect to see you there. And speaking of which, I do have the Lanyards beer.
Awesome. Oh, let's see that.
With me?
Excellent. Yeah. I like that. Oh, it's got the fish, or is that the shark?
On it.
The shark, yeah.
Huh.
Have you tried it?
Yeah, so they were selling it at the gigs. It was on draft in the Electric Ballroom. I don't think it was on in the Muff Club. But then you could also buy cans to take away. So I've still got a few left.
Awesome.
So what?
How is it? Is it good?
It's okay. It's nothing special, but it's 4.6. So it's the perfect kind of gig beer. Like, you can have a few. You're not going to get too rowdy, although we did. But
Dogfish Head did one for Brooklyn Bowl, and it was kind of the same thing, where it's like, it's all right, but yeah, it's high alcohol content, do the job.
Yeah, and it's that, or kind of Carling, or whatever other terrible lager they have at Camden, so definitely preferable.
Okay, so then Fiona, why don't you just kind of walk us into the Electric Ballroom night one on March 4th there. Have you been there before? What are your impressions of the place? Just kind of that.
Yeah, so been there for two previous Weekenders. So you guys haven't been to Camden?
No.
I think Camden itself requires some context.
Okay.
Because it's quite a strange place in a way. For want of kind of a better description, it's always been sort of London's sort of hub of kind of punk and indie, and so in the 90s it was kind of the hub of Britpop. Now there's a lot of kind of stalls where you can buy band t-shirts and Nirvana hoodies and Bob Marley t-shirts and things like that. A lot of the shops smell of weed. There are punks, really kind of over-the-top punks with giant mohawks that you can pay to have your picture taken with. It's all that kind of thing. There's a big market. There's a lot of food stalls.
So it's kind of like Greenwich Village back in the day.
I was just going to say that.
I don't like that anymore, but
if you imagine that, but really corny. It's kind of a touristy thing, but at the same time, it's great.
Excellent.
Whenever I go to London, I always go to Camden, because even though it is, it's a little bit cheesy, I just think it's really fun. and they're sort of attempting to gentrify it, but all they're doing is just bringing in more food stalls. So it's actually quite a nice form of gentrification. We went to a pub before the first night, which is called The Good Mixer, which is like famously where all the Britpop stars used to go. And Graham Coxon from Blur used to get his post sent there because he basically lived there. That is still kind of a sticky, flawed, dingy. There were some Whole Steady fans in there meeting up. They were just sat next to us.
Oh, cool.
It's kind of a classic kind of grimy rock pub. So the Electric Ballroom very much fits in with Camden as a whole. It's a typical kind of rock venue. I'm not sure what the capacity is, but it feels big.
It looked pretty big on the video feed.
Yeah.
I've looked it up. It's we were talking about this the other day. It's about the same size as the Brooklyn Bowl. It's 1,500 people.
Oh, so, okay, cool. Yeah, that sounds.
But I think from the look of it, it looked like there's more venue there than there is in Brooklyn Bowl. Or Brooklyn Bowl has like the bowling alleys and the restaurant area that seemed to have that as floor. So that was kind of cool.
Yes. Yeah. It's basically just a bar, some toilets, and a venue. Yeah.
What else do you need?
There is a balcony, which is really nice.
Yeah, that looked really cool.
That did look cool.
Yeah.
Place to see it.
It was quite nice to see there were people sitting up there. And that's probably quite a nice... You probably get a really good view. I would never do it, because I like to be at the front, but you probably do get... It's probably quite nice. If you want a more civilized experience, probably quite nice.
Well, you get to Electric Ballroom. So, yeah, we'll just start there. What did you think of the set? Do you play some of your favorite songs?
Yes, I've just been looking back at it. And until you look at Saturday night, it seems like pretty much the perfect set. They made us wait a long time for Stuck Between Stations, which I thought was a bit strange. But yeah, it was great. I mean, I think everybody was just so excited. The atmosphere was amazing, and I knew that it would be. But I spoke to so many people who said that it was the first time they'd seen any live music since the previous week. Well, the previous live weekender. Right. And that was the case for me. I hadn't seen anything.
Wow.
Since.
Now, when did London open back up? How much of a time frame was that?
To be honest, it's been gradual.
Okay.
I think live music's been back for probably the whole of the past year to some extent.
Okay.
But there's been kind of restrictions come in, restrictions go out, and I was saving myself for this.
Saving yourself for the scene. All right.
Exactly. So I knew that the atmosphere would be amazing, and it didn't disappoint. I think everybody, the second they stepped out, everybody was just over the moon about it. Did you guys watch it on the live stream?
Yes.
We did.
Yep, and like we were saying before, the live stream's awesome. You can hear the band really well, but you can't hear the crowd. So like when they did Unpleasant Breakfast, we couldn't hear the woos and stuff. But it was a pretty good, it sounded pretty good though. And you could see the millions of people, or the hundreds of people there. So
yeah.
One of the things that struck me is that there was a lot of horns on this particular set, like more so than on other sets where they kind of just sprinkled them in. It just seemed like they were out there for at least half the show.
Because they went away and then they came back.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that you say that, because from where I was standing, I couldn't hear them.
Oh.
And to be honest, I think that's probably one of my only criticisms of, if there has to be a criticism.
Of course.
That's probably my only criticism of the Friday night, was I couldn't hear the horns at all.
Yeah.
They definitely add a lot to the music. It's really cool having them. I'm very happy that they've made this like network of horn players.
And I know on the live streams, it's been brilliant. hearing them.
Yeah.
To give them the benefit of the doubt, it's probably where I insist on standing. Because I'm always to the right of the stage as you look at it, but more towards the speaker stack. And I don't know whether it's just that I was too close to the speakers.
Right. So you're on the Tad side of the stage, basically.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And then I've always been Tad side, but on Sunday I went Fran side.
Wow, switching it up.
Yeah.
I try to make a point of doing the same. Like when they do Brooklyn Bowl, it's three nights, and I'll try to stand in a different spot in each one.
See,
it is a different experience.
I always try to get front center. Like, excuse my language, but I've stared at Craig's crotch a lot more than, because I'm always front and center. But now I'm taking Gasper's advice and trying to start to move around a little bit and get different spots. So.
Well, I think the one time I was front and center, I was on the barrier, and I broke two of my ribs. So
no way.
Yeah, that's going back quite a long time. But I can say in honesty that the whole study almost killed me.
Wow.
Thousand kids will fall in love in all these clubs tonight. 1,000 other kids will end up rushing blood tonight. 2,000 kids won't get all that much sleep tonight. 2,000 kids, they still feel pretty sweet tonight.
That's a...
But that is something I noticed on the stream. They have that barrier that puts it... It probably puts about, like, what, 3-4 feet between the stage and the audience, which I think is mostly so that they have a pit to allow people the photographing to happen. But
yes.
Is that a permanent structure in that venue?
Oh, yeah. And actually, most venues in the UK, even ones that are slightly smaller than that, there's always that gap, and there's usually security guards standing in there.
Okay.
So they catch crowd surfers, and they hand out water, and they just kind of make sure everybody's okay. But it is also full of photographers a lot of the time.
Because they do that here, but that's usually larger venues. Like, it doesn't have to be like a gigantic one, but like a Hammerstein Ballroom has it, I'm pretty sure. And I think Irving Plaza used to do it. Irving's a little smaller, but most of the smaller venues or like that size of 1,500, you don't usually see that.
Oh, really?
When we saw it on the screen, it was like, wow, I wonder if they're doing that for this particular crowd or if that's the way it is. But it's
anyway. Yeah, no, that's a permanent structure, I think. But that is, because this would have been... When I broke my ribs, it would have been, I'm going to say Manchester Academy. I might not be right about that. But it was pretty much because of the barrier. Had there just been a stage, I would have just fallen on the stage and I would have been fine. But because of where the barrier sat on me, mm-hmm. there was a surge forward and I kind of felt it go. But I didn't really notice till the next day that actually I couldn't breathe. So. Wow.
But you got to finish the show. What a trooper.
Oh, I made it through the rest of it. I think I may have had some alcoholic assistance with the
That always helps. That always helps.
It does help.
But that's prevented me from being in front of Craig since, just in case.
And it looks like the I don't know, did you notice this, Gasper, but it looked like from the Saturday feed, there was a little more, not crowd surfing, but where everybody kind of bounces to the right and then bounces back to the left. It seemed like England, I don't know, they move around maybe more than the American crowds. Am I right or wrong, or did anybody else not notice that? Or
I've heard the band say that before, that the London crowds tend to be kind of the most raucous.
And I think it's because in London, they never have, do you guys ever have... seats where you sit down? I don't think they ever have that in London, do they?
Not often, no.
So that could be the difference. Maybe the crowd's more used to being mobile like that, yeah.
And, you know, one of the amazing things about it is that, obviously, with all due respect, it's not the youngest fan base, and we're all getting a little older, and everybody still goes for it, which is great.
It's amazing. It's amazing. All right, so yeah, I was just counting. It looks like out of the 21 songs they had, they came out and played they played 4 and 4. So 8 out of the 21 songs, if I'm counting, before the were horn songs.
I've got the set list here, yeah.
Yep. So we
we kind of went over the set list the other night, but is there anything, any songs that you were really happy to see live? Or I suppose you've seen them all.
Well, all of them, yeah. probably, for me, the one that I wanted the most, and I think we were the only night that, I think the Friday was the only night that got it, was Unpleasant Breakfast. I was so happy to hear it. because the live stream from the Brooklyn Bowl, I watched whichever night they didn't play it. So I've never heard them play it live. I've never even seen it on the live stream. And that's my absolute favorite from Open Door Policy. So I was crossing everything for that one. And it didn't disappoint.
Yeah, I think that's definitely become one that's going to be a mainstay in the set list. That's
I hope so, because it's wonderful. And yeah, so that was probably... Looking at the set list, that's probably my highlight. One thing that I did, just to throw some negativity in there, sure. One thing that I did want to mention, and I wanted to kind of get your opinions on this. This is probably heresy, but I don't like it when they play Southtown Girls.
Really?
I'm just not that into Southtown Girls, and I feel like it slows the set down. I know they played it towards the end, but I just feel like it kind of slows things down.
I've heard other people say that also. Yeah,
that's good to know, because both me and my husband both said, because he's not as familiar with that song, and he was like, well, what was that one? And I said, oh, it's the last song on Boys and Girls in America. And to be honest, it has become one that I tend to skip. I tend to just end the album before it. So that's probably the only thing in the set that I was like, oh, okay.
There's always those songs that you do tend to like. So I'm not a big fan of Navy Sheets, so like I will skip that one. And then there's
Navy
other
Sheets
songs
is the worst
that, like,
Hold Steady song.
And then there's some songs that like you just skip them on the record, but then you hear them live and you're like, I really like them live.
Yeah.
Southtown Girls, I gotta disagree with you. I love that one, but see, in to me, and it's funny because I had the opportunity to do this and I didn't do it, but it's. And Mike could probably speak to it because it's local to Minnesota. Like, you can drive those routes that he's talking about.
Oh, okay.
Those are all real places. I was not too... When I did visit Minnesota, I was not too far away from the quarry. And I told this story on another podcast where, like, one of the guys was like, yeah, if you literally go down that way, like, you'll hit the quarry. He's like, I wouldn't recommend you do it. But I'm like, oh, okay, I never did. But have you ever driven the routes, Mike, or, like...
Well, he mentions the 494, and that's right. I drive that to go buy, you know, socks and underwear when I go to the Mall of America. But but I like how he makes it sound really romantic, and, you know, he makes all those areas sound, and it's just right. A suburb. It's just and he makes it sound really romantic, and that's what I like about it. So, yeah, but it is funny how, and me and Gasper have been talking about doing an episode where we talk about the song we don't like as much as everybody else and the song we like that nobody else seems to like. So we might have
that
to have you back on. We
might have to have
that
might
back.
Be my one. Well, yeah, but actually, I might have the opposite answer to that, because I was really, really happy that they played Sweet Part of the City. And I don't know how popular that song is, but I was super excited to hear it.
So I think that's pretty... It's still, most people, I think, do like that song. They don't play that record as often as they had been. When they were touring for that record, I saw them play that whole record a bunch. But like that record and Teeth Dreams have just slowly become less of the set, because there's, 110 songs I think they have to draw from. So it becomes, you got to cut something.
And I get the impression that they are aware of the general opinion on Teeth Dreams, that it is weaker.
Yeah.
And I think they seem to be aware of it, and that's maybe why they don't play them.
Yeah. Although I felt like, have you gone back to listen to Teeth Dreams? Like,
I did it the week before the Weekender, actually, and I probably hadn't listened to it for at least a couple of years, and I enjoyed it more than I remember. It's too long, I think. I think if it was just a little shorter, you'd probably appreciate the really good songs more if there weren't the couple that are not so great.
Yeah, it's a little uneven. I think Craig, I've heard him in interviews say, he thinks maybe the reason they don't play it live is there's no Franz on those two albums.
I also think that, yeah.
But Craig said, yeah, if you would have had the keyboards, and the guy that produced Teeth Dreams didn't have him do the, you know, they didn't never come down and then have Craig do his little talking part. They didn't slow down. It was all like you know, medium classic rock speed where they just kind of went at it. So they never had the slowdown parts. But other than that, I think the writing was equal to the other albums. That's kind of, yeah, there were some songs.
I would really love to hear them play Oaks as well. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear them play Oaks.
Everyone goes to that song. And it's funny because that was supposed to be the last Old Steady song. Like, that's, they were done at that point. And then they obviously are back. I think Open Door Policy, once that exists and you enjoy that record, if you go back and listen to Teeth Runes, I feel like you hear it a different way. Because it gives you a frame of reference of, like, this is where the band is now, where I think Teeth Runes is kind of a departure for them. But I really like that record. I think it's better than it gets credit for.
I feel like that about Heaven Is Wherever.
Okay.
I feel like people don't give that enough credit. And although it's not one of my favorites, the good songs on it are amazing.
Right. Yeah, I think The Weeknders is a top, I say this about probably about 30 of their songs, but I think it's a top 5 song for them. I really think that's a good song.
And it was fantastic to hear that on the Friday as well. It was really fun to hear that.
Does that become like an anthem for the show, the Weeknders, like the way Massive Nights would for Brooklyn?
I would hope so. I think that was the only time they played it, though.
They do only play it once the whole weekend.
That was kind of surprising, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should whip it out every night as like the theme tune.
I agree. It's a good song too. Okay.
I'm just looking at what they played for the encore. That was the other thing that I was interested to get your take on. When they played the Feelers, I felt like the room just sort of dropped.
Okay.
Like that was probably the one song where it felt like it didn't really work. On one of the live streams, I think it might have been the weekend of last year, I think they started with it.
Yep.
And it was a bit of a rocky start because it might have just been me because I was so excited about watching the live stream and I was, you know, it was a Saturday night and I was having a great time. And then it was like, I kind of want it to go in hard.
Well, that's one of the ones that's, it's not really... It's not a banger, and it's, you could almost put it in the deep cut kind of category where it's like, if you were to have Hold Steady singles, like that's not one of them, but it's.
I compare it to Sweet Part of the City. It's the first track and it's slow, just like Sweet Part of the City was. And I some people kind of down. I mean, maybe if they put it later in the album, people would receive it better. I don't know, but
yes, yeah, and I think if they placed it differently in the set as well.
Yeah,
I think to open encore with it was a bit like, we want to keep going mad.
One of the other nights they have certain songs. It seems like they've been opening the encore with a slow because they've been doing certain songs. And then they hit it with the two or three songs.
I'm going to be massively songs. Hypocritical because I always, always like an encore that starts with certain songs. So right.
Yeah. I think it works in that spot. Because I think that's a very popular opinion. Everybody, they're waiting for that song. It's a good spot for them to jump back in, and then you get in your three bangers. So I agree with you. That's a good spot for certain songs.
Yeah.
Certain songs, they get so scratched into our souls. Certain songs, they get so scratched into our souls.
Do we have anything else to say about Night One, guys?
Yeah, I have to recommend outside of the Electric Ballroom, immediately outside of the Electric Ballroom, there is a burger bar. and it stays open really, really late. And it's really exceptional.
Awesome.
And I just think that everybody, I don't know what the name of it is. I should have probably Googled that, shouldn't I? But you can't miss it. It's an open-fronted place. But they do some really weird things. I got a Merguez baguette, and I was very happy.
Awesome.
So I just wanted to tell everybody for next year.
I am putting it on the list.
They need to be going to the burger bar.
Now, is burgers, are they considered American food, or is that considered just international food? Like,
I think we've claimed the burger.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. So now you didn't go to night two. Did you watch it on the live stream or?
I didn't. I had a massive night in a different way on the Saturday. I went to Bermondsey and went to a vast number of breweries.
Wow.
Oh, cool.
But I do have thoughts on the set list.
Okay, let's hear them.
Even though I wasn't there, I think it's the strongest set list of the three. Okay. I think people got Blackout Sam, they got Multitude of Casualties, they got Slapped Actress to finish, and they got Hot Stuff Light, which is one of my top five Whole Study songs.
Yeah, me too.
And they got T-Shirt Tucks. It's a brilliant set list.
It's funny how, and like even songs that like don't make the whole weekend, and you're getting like so many songs over the weekend. They do a great job of playing a lot of unique songs, but you do find yourself going, "Well, we didn't hear this."
it's amazing, isn't it? Because if I hadn't seen Saturday's set list, I would have been like, "I think I heard everything that I wanted to hear," because I had such a good time, it wouldn't have occurred to me to think about it. But having seen Saturday's set list, I was like, we never even heard Party Pit. So was it good on the live stream?
It was. And that's interesting because Party Pit is one that they do normally play every time, right? Like,
yeah.
Almost always fifth, and they played it at mid-set here. That's my thing. Every time I've seen Party Pit, it's been the fifth song, and I want to hear it towards the end because it's one of my jams. It's kind of the song that got me into them. So, yeah.
And it's always really good with the walk around and drink some more bit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep.
That's always a highlight. So, yeah, I mean, I'd love to hear how Saturday seemed to you guys because it looks like a brilliant set.
I think it sounded the best on the live feed, right, Gasper?
Did sound the best. So the first night, I feel like they didn't have the mix figured out. It was very bassy. It was good. It was fine. I saw some people complain more about the stream than I thought, like, you know, was credited. Because when we were watching it, we were like, yeah, that sounds okay. But then when I heard Saturday's set, I'm like, yeah, it's definitely better. So they fixed it for sure. So, yeah, there's definitely something to that.
Did you get on the big screen?
I'm sorry?
Did you get on the big screen? They were showing us, you guys, in the stream. On a big screen.
Right, I didn't do I didn't do that this year. I did that the last time they streamed the weekend here, so we didn't do it this time. I don't know why we didn't actually.
What do you guys think? Here's, I got an idea to be on the big screen. See, I got my reading glasses on now. If I grab a guitar, I can do a pretty good Craig, and I was gonna go.
That would have been amazing.
I wonder if he'd hate that though, because I can't believe nobody ever does an imitation. I could wear a button down shirt and just be like.
I can't believe more people don't do that because it seems like there's an awful lot of us who are bespectacled. So
we were talking about how like it gets a little Rocky Horror Picture Show with some of the stuff they do. We start dressing up like the band.
Yeah,
because I think all of the hand signals and things now are just kind of it's not Craig's thing anymore, is it? We're all doing it.
Yeah.
It does become a little bit like, I feel like if you were to take somebody to see the whole study for the first time, which I did with my husband a few years ago, you kind of have to prompt them beforehand on like, there's going to be a lot of call and response and you have to know when to do five fingers up and when to do six fingers up. And there's a lot to learn.
But that goes over really well because I've actually done that where like, I'll just hijack somebody to a show and be like, come on, you're coming, we're going to have a good time. And couple of guys at work who like they're not into them. They like I've played them for them. They're like, yeah, it's not my thing, but they come to the show and it's just a different experience. Where they've all admitted to me, it's like I had a great time. Like this is crazy, and it's like a big party. And I think you just get sucked into it, like whether you like them or not. So
I don't think you could. Obviously, we're biased, but I don't think you could go to something like, especially what they do now, like the Weekenders, because it's such an experience and the atmosphere is so brilliant. I don't think you could go to something like that and come away unconverted.
great point. Yeah, I remember I brought somebody for the first time and I was like, oh, I go, my favorite part is Craig forgets the lyrics. And I just love, and he didn't forget the lyrics that night. And I haven't heard him. He kind of forgets them, but he used to really bog them like pretty bad. And I don't know if he's got more sober, but he doesn't do it anymore where he just like,
no. I think he made it through the nights I saw, both nights. I think he pretty much nailed it the whole way.
I've seen him mess up a few times recently. It still happens. Did he do it on the benefit stream? I think I'm trying to remember if he did or he didn't. But yeah, he's still bungles the lyrics every now and again.
He managed at one point on Friday. He managed to knock his own glasses off, and Steve had to help him.
Oh my gosh!
which was quite adorable. I think he got so enthusiastic that he managed to actually swipe himself in the face and knock his own glasses off.
I just wish Steve would have wore the furry. What was that? A furry wig or a furry hat that he was wearing in the sound check?
Oh no, that's Tad. That's Tad's.
Or Tad.
Tad. Like the big Russian hat. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
He had it on outside the Moth Club on Sunday, and I didn't realize it was him to begin with. And I sort of glanced at him through the corner of my eye and was like, who's that guy in like a crazy wig? Because in the dark, it looked like somebody just had a wild wig on.
Yeah.
But it was the big furry hat, which was a good look.
He's been wearing that for a while. And actually, this past Brooklyn Bowl show, I remember we were waiting outside to go in. I was standing out there talking. I looked to my right, and there he is with that crazy hat. And like he was rummaging through his car. I don't even know what he was doing. It was very bizarre to see him in that setting. But it's like, that's Tad. All right.
There's such an accessible group. It's funny. You can see him before and after the show, just walking around and texting people and stuff. Yeah.
Do you talk to them though?
I have. So in Brooklyn, they go to this bar called Lake Street. Which is partially owned by, I think, the drummer. I forget which member.
Yeah, it's Bobby, because I remember him telling me about it the one time that I have spoken to him.
And it's just this little small bar. It's tiny. And everyone who knows about it goes from Brooklyn Bowl. They just walk right over to it. And we all just hang out there because you know they're coming there. And they spend the whole night talking to you. And it's they are very accessible. And yeah, they're all down to earth.
The only reason I ask is that I once embarrassed myself in front of Craig. So, and it haunts me to this day. I met him at Under the Road Festival. This is years ago, I hasten to add. I'm a much more sensible person now. But as it was a festival, I was maybe a little inebriated. And they were doing a sign-in. But I got there early and Craig was just milling about. But he was obviously kind of doing his own thing. He wasn't ready to be kind of chatted at by fans. And I went up and I gave him a very drunken spiel about how much his music meant to me. And I had my photo taken with him. And in the photo, I'm looking ecstatic. I'm the happiest person in the world. And he looks absolutely bemused. And it has haunted me since.
I have a similar, I got a selfie with him and I was with my friend Alex, who I don't know what was going on. He takes selfies with, he's a pretty good podcaster and he takes selfies with like rock stars all the time, like famous people. And I'm like, let's go take a selfie with Craig. He was playing a solo show at the Triple Rock and the Triple Rock was closing. That was a big Lifter Polar. That was kind of their main place. And it was closing like a week later. So I was talking to my friend Alex, who takes these pictures with all these like celebrities, and he's just like, just give me, he's just like slamming drinks. He's like, I need one more drink. He's like, okay, we can do this. And we went up and did it. And I think I did the same thing. I said a silly song. I go, we're going to be at Brooklyn Bowl next, you know, and he's like, who cares, you know, but yeah.
I can still remember every word pretty much that I said to him, and I won't repeat it because it was very embarrassing. But I saw him solo a few years ago and I managed to meet him and be a normal person and not overwhelm him with my emotions. So I feel like I've made it up to him, but it does put me off ever attempting to speak to him again.
I think you're good. They are very approachable and very cool, so I wouldn't worry about it. And he probably doesn't remember the way you remember.
Yeah, and he'll have had that experience so many times that...
At least he didn't say to me, you're the guy that's always in front of my crotch, because that was like, that was like I saw him four times in a row and I was in the same spot and he actually gave me a head nod when he saw me. So I go, oh no, he recognizes me. That means I've been to too many shows. But
that's the dream though.
Yeah.
Because I feel like everybody in the audience recognizes each other.
Yep.
And that's one of the lovely things, is that, you know, you don't necessarily know their name, or, you know, we have certain things that we refer to other people in the crowd as, like, oh, that's the guy that looks like Richard Hawley. and there's a few others. I won't embarrass anybody by naming them. But you do wonder whether the band is also looking at the crowd going, oh, there's that guy. Yeah, there's that. There she is. Yep. And kind of ticking you off.
I think to an extent they do.
Yep.
There are the cast of characters that come out to everything. They're known to
and I can't believe they can see him in the crowd. Like, they pick him out. Like, he'll go, over there is that one guy that's been to 100 shows. And then the people that come from New Zealand has been to a ton of shows. I can't believe that, from New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
That's
wow.
Crazy. Yep.
I'd love to go to the Australia show one day, too, but that is a commitment.
That's a hell of a commitment, yeah.
Even
from either where you are or where I am, that's
a... Yeah, either way, yeah. So... So then we could talk about night three, and just looking at the Instagram pictures, I like somebody, maybe Craig said it, but he said it looked like a Wes Anderson. It looks like a Wes Anderson shot with the crazy colors. It looks like it's like in somebody's basement. It just, I like that comparison.
Yeah. So, cause they didn't live stream that, did they?
No.
So we did not see it at all.
And I got to say, I'm totally jealous because looking at the, I've seen some clips and you know, from people's cell phones and some photos, and that looked like an amazing experience.
It was wonderful.
Looks tiny, and to see them in that kind of environment, I love that. So tell us about that.
The venue itself. So the venue is called the Moth Club, and it stands for, hang on, I have this written down. Let me get this right. It stands for the Members of the Order of Tin Hats Club.
Wow. Wow.
That's cool.
Again, that's a pretty Wes Anderson thing.
Yes.
So it's actually an ex-service men's club. So do you guys have working men's clubs in America?
So I'm trying to figure...
They're like, different. It's usually the... When they say like men's club, it's usually take off your clothes type club.
it's definitely not that.
Yeah.
What we have here are like Knights of Columbus and Kiwanis. Do they have that in Minnesota, Mike?
Yes.
So I'm thinking it's probably like that. That's the impression that I get anyway.
Is that sort of a, what do they call it? Like a stone masons?
You're thinking of the masons. I don't know.
It could be, as far as I know.
I've never been to a Masonic temple because that always seemed a little cultish to me. But a Knights of Columbus basically is, so... It's where men get together, and it's a service orientated thing. So it has a Christian side to it and a community side to it. And you just I tried to become a knight, which is its own story. but I don't go anymore. But they do nice stuff in the community is pretty much what they do. But they meet in these small kind of they're just wood panel usually rooms.
It's kind of like the Flintstones, Water Buffalo, whatever that was. Remember that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's the same idea. Yeah.
So if you take that idea, but replace doing nice things in the community with drinking really cheap ale.
Which is so much better.
That's kind of... So the Moth Club is... It feels to me like a uniquely kind of very British thing, of kind of these little bars where I'm guessing, but I think they were probably set up after the First World War for kind of retired servicemen. Some of them still exist, but I think they've had to repurpose a lot of them in the way that they have the Moth Club. Although it certainly appeared that the Moth Club was still an operational pub. And you could definitely imagine there being a lot of very old men and exclusively men. The drinks are always cheaper than they are anywhere else. There's also a plaques on the wall commemorating various, I guess, army regiments or it seems to me like such a kind of quintessentially Little England thing that the juxtaposition of the whole study being there was really fun. I don't know if they've ever played anywhere like that before. Or certainly not for a very long time, I'd say, because I think the capacity was only 300.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't look it up. But I got the impression that it was very similar to seeing, like, when I went to see them in Minnesota, they played 7th Street Entry, which is a little tiny spot underneath Fifth Avenue.
They're like the same size, except 7th Street Entry is black on black, and this is all, like we said, Wes Anderson colors with the bright colors. Right. Yeah, but otherwise, I think they're the same size.
Like, yeah, they put all tinsel up, and to I guess to add some color to the place, because it's, you know, it's a very kind of, it's stuck in the decor that it was built with. So they'd hung this tinsel up, and there was inflatable letters that said Moth. The sound man was in kind of a cupboard with a cage on it. The stage was probably the size of the room I'm in now. They were really kind of crammed together. I don't recall ever seeing them somewhere like that, even, you know, even reasonably early days, because I think, to my knowledge, it probably isn't a gig venue very often. I think we found out that actually stand-up comedians use it to sort of road test their material. That's its primary use now.
That'd be the perfect size, yeah.
I wonder what the people who run the Moth Club thought after that show. Because, like, I gotta figure, like, did they know what they were getting into?
I can only assume they didn't. The bar staff certainly seemed quite bemused about it. Because I went up to the bar after the gig because I was trying to get my 4-pack of the Lanyards beer. And I presumed it would be there. And the guy was just like, you're some kind of alien. Please go to the merch stand. But yeah, I don't know how they convinced the Moth Club to let them do it. But I would imagine they are still cleaning the place a week later. Because the confetti.
So much confetti everywhere.
So much confetti. And just the heat of it. Because, so, there was no barrier. The stage was probably knee-high, kind of.
Yeah, it looks knee-high from the picture. They barely could stack the speakers in front of it, yeah.
And it was, there were times when I couldn't raise my arms. It was really kind of crammed in. And it's so strange after not being in a crowd for 2 years.
Yeah.
There was one point where, because I was on the second row, and the guy in front of me kind of fell onto the stage, and I instinctively kind of reached down and grabbed his waist and picked him up. And I was thinking, well, we don't touch strangers anymore. Like, this is weird. So, but in the loveliest possible way, because it was, you know, there was times when it was so tightly packed and it was going so mental that I was just kind of laughing maniacally. Like, I was so happy to be in that moment that I wasn't even singing anymore. I was just laughing. It was absolutely great.
Yeah, it's so nice to get back to that. Because, like, I think my first show back from COVID was Ben Folds at Irving Plaza, which was a totally different kind of setup where, like, you had to have your vaccination card. You were going to show it at the door. You had to have your mask. The mask had to be on the whole show. Unless you were drinking beer, which was a very weird rule. And so, like, everyone was very hesitant to, like, how is this going to go? And then you get to something like this where it's just like, rules are out the window. We're having a good time.
Yeah. Like, and that's how it felt. It felt like, right, the gloves are off. Like, you just go as mad as you want to go. And actually, at one point, Craig did stop the crowd and say, you know, you need to just be jumping up and down. You need to stop pushing people forwards. Because there was serious risk that at least the people I was around were going to kind of fall onto the stage and take him out. So there was a warning. And which, again, you know, there's not many people under 30 in that room. And they brought it.
That reminds me of when I saw them at 7th Street Entry, which is the same that me and Gaspar were talking about, the small club. And I went after an American football game, the Vikings. And I was actually wearing a jersey, which I forgot to take off, so I looked like a nerd. But half the crowd were Packers, they wear green, and half were the Vikings, they wear purple, and they hate each other. And Craig said, oh, he goes, because our name of our quarterback is Cousins, and he goes, I'm kicking it with Cousins. And half the crowd started booing and half started cheering. And Tad, who never talks on stage, said, we're in a very small place. He goes, can we just get along for that? I've never heard him talk on stage since or before. So that was kind of fun. Yeah, that's my little story. So.
No, it was, I mean, the heat in there was unbelievable. This is probably a bit disgusting, but I'll tell you. I had kind of corduroy dungarees on. Not an ideal gig outfit, I suppose. But even the following morning, I touched them to put them back in my bag. And I'd managed to sweat through my bra, my T-shirt, and some corduroy dungarees to the extent that the next morning they were soaking wet. Like, it was that hot in there.
Yep. And that's a thing for whole steady shows to begin with. Like, it's everyone comes out a sweaty mess. I can only imagine in an environment like that.
Yeah. It was, well, the worst thing about that was that the following morning, the hotel that we were staying at had had some sort of water emergency and we couldn't have a shower. That was unfortunate.
And you guys got a great set for that show too. I mean, just looking over it, like, they played Adderall, they played Sequester, they played Denver Haircut.
Yes.
That must have been a lot of fun.
That was, yeah. There was one run that they did, which was, yeah, so Sequestered into Denver Haircut into Chips Ahoy, which is just like,
yeah.
And then they played one for the Cutters after that, which was nice because it was a bit of respite, but also it's quite an unusual one to hear. So that's
one of my favorites to hear. I love when they play that song. I'm so happy they
Me too.
It. So what's your favorite song from this set? Like, what was the pinnacle moment?
It was almost certainly Certain Songs, because I knew they hadn't played it the previous two nights. And I said to my husband before we went in, like, I'm putting money on it. We're getting it tonight. And then for them to come out and start the encore with that was really special. I may have got a little emotional during the encore.
You're not the first to say that, actually. I believe that's the one that Dave said he got choked up on.
And then you got a new song right after that. We think it was Llama, is what we're thinking.
Yes, which I think was quite a strange decision. Because nobody knew it. And everybody, so it had gone from being everybody going completely mental for like an hour and 40 minutes. And then everybody just sort of stood there and went, oh, I've got to listen to this one. And it was a bit of a strange decision on their part, I think.
But it's new material. So, like, what do you think about the new material? Like,
you got two songs. So,
yeah, they played Bloodbath, I think it's called, earlier on. And that sounded brilliant because that had everybody in the band was doing woos at various points. So I'm really looking forward to hearing that one properly. I think if I'm honest with Llamas, the sound by then wasn't great and you couldn't really hear Craig. So we didn't really get any idea of the melody or anything really. We could pretty much just hear guitar at that point. So it's really hard to say.
Yeah, but like I was saying on the last podcast, they played Lanyards, I think, at the last Weekenders, the streaming one, the pandemic one, and they played it like two or three times, and it was kind of muddling. I don't know if it was received well, and now it's kind of one of my favorite songs. It just, I think they had to work through it, yeah.
And I think to some extent, it was almost like a kind of cheeky wink to the audience of like, we're doing more new stuff. You know, this isn't like, we've put out open door policy and maybe we're winding up again. I think it was almost to say, like, this is a going concern. We've got more.
Right. Which is awesome.
Which is great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, so the new stuff you got to figure, and probably very much like Lanyards when we were getting it then, like, they're just still kind of working through this stuff. Like, they're the first time they're playing it live, they're still working out the kinks. These aren't even really the song titles yet. Like, that, they're the working titles. So it'll be interesting to see where they go. I think Bloodbath is pretty much ready, though.
It sounds it. Yeah. It sounds it. Because I saw Denver Haircut the first time they played that as well. That was at the sound check in 2019, I think.
Sounds right.
But that was kind of like, that was like an instant classic. It felt like it just fit, and then everybody kind of grabbed it straight away.
Right.
Well, like what I like is how their new stuff is really good. It won't be like the casino I work at. We have a lot of the has-been rock groups. And when my joke is when they say, don't go to the bathroom, when they say, now we're going to play some of our new stuff because it gets so crowded in the bathroom. But I don't think it'll be like that with the Hold Steady. I mean, open door policy. I like that.
It doesn't seem like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the reaction that Lanyards gets, Heavy Covenant, we got both of the nights that I went. It was brilliant both nights. I love that song. I do feel like open door policy has just been a really unexpected resurgence and resurrection, to use the lexicon of the appropriate lexicon. I just, even with Thrashing Through the Passion, which I really like, but it very much feels like a collection of individual songs rather than an album.
Right. Well, I mean,
don't think you could have predicted an open door policy.
I think that's largely because of how they released it. They experimented a lot with Bandcamp, and they were just doing off these one and two songs and then decided to put together the collection. So it doesn't really feel like an album.
No.
So I agree with you. It's... And
then I think to suddenly have open door policy, which is so kind of complete and
yes,
right, and almost like it's like a not a reimagining of the band, but it's like it's where they are now. So like it's not Separation Sunday, it's not Boys and Girls in America. It's
more cleaner sound, yeah.
Right? And more mature. I like where they've gotten. You know what I mean? It makes you feel like yeah, they can be around for a long time more because they are still putting out great stuff.
And I feel like it fits my trajectory with them because I think after Teeth Dreams, I did fall off a little bit and I stopped seeing them as much. And, you know, I wouldn't have necessarily said they were my favorite band anymore. But it was Craig's solo stuff that brought me back.
Yes.
Okay.
That kind of trio of albums I love as much as I love the whole study. I think they're absolutely wonderful.
I agree.
But I like the open door policy it is almost like a foot in both camps.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's got the same producer and I think it's got some of the same sort of airiness and space. It seems like it fits my progression with the group in that sense.
I could see that.
Yeah, I think that their fans are aging with them. And it's just perfect how it works out that way, I think. Yeah.
And I also think that the stories have got... What I said to one of my friends when it came out was that in the earlier albums, the characters are making mistakes, but they're making ones that you can imagine them coming back from. I feel like on Open Door Policy, people are making mistakes in their 40s that are then much bigger mistakes.
Right.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a logical trajectory and one that we can all empathize with.
Yeah. Right.
Like you and me have got momentum. Feels like now we're in this pretty deep. We should get set up before we sleep. Feels like now we're in this pretty deep. We should get set up before we sleep.
Do we have anything else, guys, that you want to talk about?
The only other thing I wanted to talk about, and I think Gaspar, did you say you've done four nights consecutively before?
Mm-hmm.
Because the only other thing I wanted to talk about was how people do it.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how the band does it. I don't know how, because obviously I did two nights, and on Monday I was in a state, like I was in no fit shape for anything.
It's taxing. And this year, actually, I went and did three shows in Minnesota, and then it was like a week or two later we were doing Brooklyn Bowl, so it was like almost seven shows in a row.
Wow.
So yeah, it's definitely taxing.
It's because on the Sunday afternoon, we went for a couple of drinks before the show, and I think both me and my husband were feeling a little bit like, oof, like, we're tired. As soon as we were in the room, all of that went away. And I'm assuming you just have to run on that adrenaline.
Absolutely. And it does come back every night. It's just the end result is like, I need a day.
Yeah. I had to work from home on the Tuesday because I was still not up for it. So I'd love to ask the band like how they cope with it. Because they do give it everything. And
yeah, they do.
Even at the sound checks, yeah. And I'm like, you guys got to play later tonight.
And yeah.
They go
the sound checks are always a little more subdued.
Yeah.
Which is to be expected, I think. But yeah, you're still putting in the hours.
Could you live stream the sound checks?
Yes, they did live stream both of them this year. Sometimes they only do one, but they did do both of them this year.
Did you watch?
They were a lot of fun. Yeah, absolutely. They're always fun because you you pick up all kinds of stuff, the stories that they tell. It's more of a Q&A, and it's moderated, and so you get some interesting stuff.
Did you get anything juicy?
So they're releasing the coffee table book for the 20th anniversary next year. And what else did we get? Steve has a record coming out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, solo project. So I'm excited to see that, because Steve, he's been a session guy, and there is this whole other side to Steve. He has the band Big Ass Truck, I think it's called. So I'm excited to see what he puts out. That'll be fun. That might make a good episode, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, Gasper, why don't you give us your famous your line to get us out of
you
here?
You want to fill it out? Okay. So, we've been talking to Fiona from England. Thank you so much for being our guest. And
thank you for having me.
I'm Gasper. This is Mike. That's Fiona. And all of us guys and all of you guys, we are all the Hood Rat Recap.
Yeah.
There is so much joy in what we do up here. An Ybor City is thrice speedy, but they throw such killer parties. Killer parties almost kill me. Killer parties almost kill me.